In anticipation of Balaram's appearance. When is that going to be?
Tuesday,
right? I thought it'd be nice to focus some attention on Lord Balaram. I'm going to ask you, especially our young devotees here, to say one thing that you can think of in glorification of Lord Balaram. Lord Balaram. When you think of Lord Balaram, what do you think? Balaram did what? Balaram killed Pralambasura. That's what you think of when you think of Balaram. Okay.
Balaram is always strong.
How do you know that? Okay. Well, that's what his name means. Bala means spiritual strength. So he's the source of all spiritual strength. What do you think of when you think of Balaram? He what? He's Nityananda Prabhu. What does that mean? How can you be two people? What's your name?
Vidura.
So, what if we said Vidura was somebody other than Vidura? How does it work? How can Balaram be Nityananda? Because? He's the Lord, yes. So the Lord can be whatever he likes. Is that the idea? It's his expansion. Or his spiritual counterpart. So, as Balaram, he's pictured right in the front there. Balaram is the older brother of Krishna, right? So similarly, Lord Nityananda, standing on our altar over here, he is the older brother of Lord Chaitanya. So as Krishna and Lord Chaitanya are non-different, so Lord Nityananda and Lord Balaram, they're non-different. Okay. What else? When you think of Lord Balaram, what do you think of? Yes.
Balaram is also Anantashesha.
Also Anantashesha. Very good. What does that mean? Who is Anantashesha?
Balaram.
Oh. What does Anantashesha do?
Take a bite of Krishna.
Yeah. Very good. No, very, very good. And as a bed for Krishna, what does he do? He's rendering service. He not only makes a bed for Krishna, but when Balaram expands as Anantashesha, he also expands as the umbrella of Krishna, the shoes of Krishna, all of Krishna's paraphernalia. Because Balaram, so this is an important feature of Lord Balaram, he loves to serve Krishna. In fact, he's the embodiment of the original source of all modes of service. That means us. We derive we're part and parcel of Krishna, right? Living entities are Krishna's part and parcel. And constitutionally, living entities are servants of Krishna. Where does that service mood come from? Balaram. He is the original source of that mood of service, and therefore, when he expands as Anantashesh, he just wants to serve. So he serves as the bed, he serves as the pillow, he serves as the shoes, he serves as the umbrella. He serves in whatever capacity he can. Just like our drums, right? The mridanga. It's an expansion of Balaram. Did you know that?
Yeah.
They call it Balaram mridanga for that reason, because it's directly an expansion, simply for the service of Krishna. That's Lord Balaram. He loves to serve Krishna. What else? We can ask some adults now. What are some things about Krishna? Glories, excuse me, Balaram. Some nice glories of Lord Balaram.
The original spiritual master.
The original spiritual master. Did you know that? Somewhere, here and there, there's spiritual masters. And each of those spiritual masters has a spiritual master who has a spiritual master. And the original spiritual master is? Balaram. The original spiritual master. He presents teachings about Krishna. He reveals Krishna to the world. And that's the function of the spiritual master. So any spiritual master is carrying out that function of Lord Balaram, who is the original spiritual master, simply disclosing Krishna. You had your hand up?
I was going to
that one. Think of another one.
He serves Krishna in all the five rasas.
He serves Krishna in all the five rasas. That's incredible. How does that work? He loves serving Krishna so much in the form of neutrality. He manifests the Dham through his Sandini potency. One of the internal potencies of the Lord is the Sandini potency. And he manifests the Dham, and like he manifests the shoes, he manifests the umbrella, he manifests the paraphernalia of the Lord in the mood of serving the Lord in this position of neutrality. And servitorship, and here he is serving as a cowherd boy, but he likes taking this position of menial service, like Ananta Shesh, simply the servant of the Lord, or as a cowherd boyfriend, very intimate friend of Krishna. And in the parental rasa, he sometimes becomes so much absorbed in the mood of being the elder brother of Krishna that he treats Krishna like his son. Sometimes it's like that with an elder brother and younger brother. So he has such a protective and caring nature towards Krishna that he has feelings of vatsalya, or parental affection. And he even manifests himself as in conjugal rasa. That's very interesting. As Ananga Manjari, he manifests this form because his desire is simply to serve Krishna in all ways. So he has various expansions or manifestations in which he serves Krishna in those various ways. What else? Anyone else? Go ahead.
I know why Balaram manifested in a mridanga form.
In a what form?
Mridanga form.
You want to know why?
I know why.
Oh, you know why, okay.
To help in Krishna Kirtan.
Okay, good. Anyone else? How about what does Balaram carry? What does Balaram carry in his arm?
A plow.
A plow. Because in their pastimes together, Krishna and Balaram, what's their occupation? herding cows. Krishna is a cowherd boy, and Balaram serves Krishna, so he helps Krishna herd the cows. And Krishna calls the cows with his flute. What does Balaram do with his plow?
Fight.
Besides fight, what else does he do?
Protects Krishna.
He protects Krishna, but he uses it for a weapon. But he also uses it, just like Krishna uses his flute for calling the cows, Balaram uses the plow. Normally people use plow for plowing the field. According to Krishna's teaching in Bhagavad Gita, there are three main occupations for those who are Vaishyas. Krishi Goraksha Vanajam, production of grains or agricultural production, protecting the cows, and engaging in market or sales of those things that are produced from the land and from the cows. Krishi Goraksha Vanajam, Vaishya Karma Swabhavajam. So Krishna tends the cows, and Krishna and Balaram carries the plow, indicating these two main agricultural occupations, cow protection and producing of grains. So in an agrarian economy, those are the two main activities. I understand Detroit is rejoining the ranks of, or it's heritage that places that are now not able to sustain themselves to go back to agriculture. Is that right? There's some movement going in that direction. So they better take some strength from Balaram for grain production. Yes?
I have a
question. Okay, I thought you would have an answer. Do you have the answer to the question also? Oh. He doesn't. Krishna calls the cows with the plow, with a flute.
But how does Krishna do that?
He plays upon the flute, and the flute sound is so attractive that when the cows hear, they come.
I know, but
how
does he use the plow?
He doesn't. Krishna calls the cows with his flute. Balaram carries the plow. It's not for calling cows. It's for tilling the fields and hitting Pralambasuras in the head. Okay. So, I'm going to spend some time narrating this pastime of Krishna's killing Dainukasura, but we'll precede it a little bit with some appreciation that Bhaktivinoda Thakur describes in Krishna Samhita, that when Krishna is killing the demons in Vrindavan one by one, in effect, Krishna is simultaneously helping the devotees to become cleared or freed from obstacles on the path of devotional service. So, one by one, Krishna is helping us to be successful in spiritual life. Because there's obstacles in the path of spiritual life, and Krishna helps us take care of those obstacles. But there's two pastimes in the killing of demons in Vrindavan where Lord Balaram directly kills the demon. And this is one of them, Dainukasura. And what's the other one? Pralambasura. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur teaches that just as Krishna is assisted by Balaram in the mood of the original spiritual master, so also when in our case, when we're engaging in devotional service, we require taking assistance from Krishna in the form of his mercy to help us overcome obstacles and our path of spiritual life. Could you just sit nicely? Thanks. Krishna is helping us to overcome the obstacles on the path of our spiritual life, but there are things that we must do specifically as devotees to overcome difficulties that may be in our way in spiritual life. And when Krishna and Balaram kills Dhenukasura and Pralambasura, they indicate that effort that we must specifically make also, in addition to receiving Krishna's mercy and helping us overcome obstacles. There are some very specific efforts that we have to make, and we'll discuss that at the end. This, that understanding is coming from Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So this is a very attractive pastime, the way that it's narrated in Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th canto. It's a pastime that takes place directly in the forest, and the chapter is narrated if this one of the average days that the cowherd boys would enjoy pastimes together, taking the cows and herding them, going deep into the forest of Vrindavan. It's described that actually the cows were so much attracted to the all-attractive Krishna that it wasn't exactly that the cowherd boys were herding the cows. They were just playing. And the cows followed along because they were attracted by the all-attractive Krishna. As Krishna would blow his buffalo horn, they would perk up their ears, listen to that wonderful vibration, and continue further and further into the forest. As they would go into the forest, they were surrounded by the trees, the river Jamuna, and all the wonderful forest animals. And the cowherd boys would interact with the forest animals. Sometimes Krishna would talk with the birds. It's specifically described that Krishna speaks all languages. In fact, he speaks the language of the birds, so he would have conversation with the birds. And the forest animals would come and enjoy Krishna's company. One time, as they were walking through the forest, Krishna was remarking at how majestic and wonderful were all the trees in the forest of Vrindavan. And he began offering some appreciation of those trees and how they're offering their homage to Lord Balaram. Here's a scene where the cowherd boys, sometimes, usually we see the swing festival, just like this is Julan Yatra season now, swing festival. So we put Radha and Krishna on a swing. But the cowherd boys, they would enjoy a swing festival together too. Sometimes when they were in the forest, they would imitate, one of the boys would be a tiger and make a loud sound, and some other cowherd boys would run like they were deer, leaping and jumping, running away from the tiger. Sometimes they would find a well and they would call out very loudly down into the well. Loud sounds, and the sounds would come echoing back. Sometimes they would say bad names, and the bad names would come echoing back, and they would laugh. Sometimes Balaram would become tired, although he's never tired, because he's all strength. But he would have a lila where he would become tired, and Krishna would come and massage Balaram's feet. And some other cowherd boys would make a fan out of leaves and fan the body of Balaram. Another painting of Krishna's massaging Balaram's lotus feet. sometimes Krishna would be tired and the cowherd boys would come around Krishna and similarly massage him and take rest. So I'll read directly taken from Krishna book. Thus desiring to enjoy pastimes, Lord Madhava, sounding his flute, surrounded by cowherd boys who were chanting his glories, and accompanied by Lord Baladev, kept the cows before him and entered the Vrindavan forest, which was full of flowers and rich with something. What does it say? I can't.
Nourishment for the animals.
Nourishment for the animals. Okay, so now they're... What's happening here? The Supreme Personality of Godhead looked over the forest, which resounded with charming sounds of bees, animals, and birds, and which was enhanced by a lake whose clear water resembled the minds of great souls, and by a breeze carrying the fragrance of 100-petaled lotuses. Seeing all this, the Lord decided to enjoy the auspicious atmosphere. So Krishna would play upon his flute. Balaram also had a flute. Sometimes he would play to accompany Krishna. The primeval Lord saw that the stately trees with their beautiful reddish buds and their heavy burden of fruits and flowers were bending down to touch his lotus feet with the tips of their branches. Thus he smiled gently and dressed his elder brother. From the Srimad Bhagavatam, chapter 15. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, O greatest of lords, Lord Balaram, just see how these trees are bowing their heads at your lotus feet, which are worshipable by the immortal demigods. The trees are offering you their fruits and flowers to eradicate the dark ignorance that has caused their birth as trees. O original personality, these bees must all be great sages and most elevated devotees of yours, for they are worshipping you by following you along the path and chanting your glories, which are themselves a holy place for the entire world. Though you have disguised yourself within this forest, O sinless one, they refuse to abandon you, their worshipable Lord. O worshipable one, these peacocks are dancing before you out of joy. These doe are pleasing you with affectionate glances, just as the gopis do. And these cuckoos are honoring you with Vedic prayers. All these residents of the forest are most fortunate, and their behavior towards you certainly befits great souls receiving another great soul at home. He's appreciating that the birds, the trees, the bees, the doe, all the animals, peacocks, they're all worshipping his brother Balaram. This earth has now become most fortunate because you have touched her grass and bushes with your feet and her trees and creepers with your fingernails, and because you have graced her rivers, mountains, birds, and animals with your merciful glances. But above all, you have embraced the young cowherd women between your two arms, a favor hankered after by the goddess of fortune herself. Sometimes, with a voice as deep as the rumbling of clouds, he would call out with great affection the names of the animals who had wandered far from the herd, thus enchanting the cows and cowherd boys. Whoops, that's the same one we saw before. We saw that before. These are somehow repeating. Sometimes Lord Krishna grew tired from fighting and lay down at the base of a tree, resting upon a bed made of soft twigs and buds, and using the lap of a cowherd friend as his pillow. You saw this also. I have to correct what's going on. Okay. Once, some of the cowherd boys, Sridham, the very close friend of Rama and Krishna, along with Subal, Stoker Krishna, and others, lovingly spoke the following words. The cowherd boys said, "O Rama, Rama, O mighty armed one, O Krishna, destroyer of the miscreants, not far from here is a very great forest filled with rows of palm trees." Hearing the words of their dear companions, Krishna and Balaram laughed, and desiring to please them, set off to the Talavan, surrounded by their cowherd boyfriends. In that Talavan forest, many fruits are falling from the trees, and many are already lying on the ground. But there he is, Dhenukasura, in the background. The boys are describing the situation. "We want those fruits, but there's this terrible demon, Dhenukasura, and he's protecting the forest. But Balaram and Krishna, surely you can help us get those nice fruits." The demon Dhenuka has eaten men alive, and therefore all people and animals are terrified of going to the Talavan forest. "O killer of the enemy, even the birds are afraid to fly there. O Krishna, we want those fruits, but there's an obstacle. The Dhenuka demon. So please help us secure those nice tal fruits." So Balaram immediately obliged the cowherd boy's request. He entered the Talavan forest first, and he grabbed a hold of the trunk of one of the trees and began shaking. And as he was shaking the tree, many fruits fell to the ground. And the cowherd boys, you see, they're catching the fruits and gathering up the fruits and enjoying the happy setting of enjoying the tal fruits in the tal forest. Except for that same problem. Dhenuka heard this rattling of the trees and the falling of the fruits and the cowherd boys making their chattering sound, and immediately, "Who is coming into my forest?" And he came running. And he was running, he was making the whole ground tremble. And all the trees were trembling, and more fruits were falling to the ground. And he began charging straight at Balaram. So Balaram very expertly stepped to the side, grabbed a hold of the hind legs of the ass demon, and began whirling him around and around and around. The powerful demon rushed up to Lord Balaram and sharply struck the Lord's chest with the hooves of his hind legs. Then Dhenuka began to run about, braying loudly. First, Balaram was kicked in the chest because these demons, these asses, they have very powerful hind legs. So don't stand behind donkeys. Very bad move. So he ran and kicked Balaram in the chest. But Balaram, next time he came charging at him, grabbed a hold of the hind legs and in great anger whirled the Dhenuka demon around and around and threw him on top of one of the trees. And as he fell on top of one of the trees, the whole tree fell over and many fruits fell to the ground. He lost his life just by centrifugal force. Lord Balaram threw the dead body of Dhenukasura into the tallest palm tree in the forest. And when the dead demon landed in the treetop, the tree began shaking. The great palm tree, causing a tree by its side also to shake, broke under the weight of the demon. The neighboring tree caused yet another tree to shake, and this one struck yet another tree, which also began shaking. In this way, many trees in the forest shook and broke. Because of Lord Balaram's pastime of throwing the body of the ass demon into the top of the tallest palm tree, all the trees began shaking and striking against one another as if blown about by powerful winds. Well, when Dainuka was killed in that way, he had many friends. So the other ass demons, they also began charging to avenge the death of their dear friend Dainuka. And as they all came charging, Krishna and Balaram together followed the same procedure. They whirled the demons around by their hind legs and threw them on the top of the tree so many times that the trees were like as if they had clouds at the top decorating them. So Shukadev Goswami is describing to Maharaj Parikshit, as the demons attacked, Krishna and Balaram easily seized them one after the other by their hind legs and threw them into the tops of the palm trees. The earth then appeared beautifully covered with heaps of fruits and with the dead bodies of the demons, which were entangled in the broken tops of the palm trees. Indeed, the earth shone like the sky, decorated with clouds. There's the clouds decorating the tops of the trees. And this pastime was heard of by the demigods. The demigods, hearing of the magnificent feat of these two brothers and other elevated living beings, rained down flowers. You see the flowers coming down? And offered music and prayers and glorification. People now felt free to return to the forest where Dainuka had been killed, and without any fear, they ate the fruits of the palm trees. Also, the cows could now graze freely upon the grass there. Thereafter, Krishna and Balaram and the cowherd boys returned to Braja. So this is describing Krishna and Balaram's return at the end of the day, after killing Dainuka. I can't read from the angle where I am. The print at the bottom is too dark. But you get the idea. Krishna, from the corners of his eyes, his sidelong glances upon the young damsels, we can see amongst the damsels, there's one that has a crown. That's Srimati Radharani. And so, delighting the cowherd girls just with their glances, the cowherd boys, headed by Krishna and Balaram, gave them great satisfaction. So he concludes, "My dear Parikshit, that Lord Balaram killed Dainukasura is not such a wonderful thing, considering that he is the unlimited personality of Godhead, the controller of the entire universe. Indeed, the entire cosmos rests upon him, just as a woven cloth rests upon its horizontal and vertical threads." This phrase appears in a number of places in the Bhagavatam, Otam and Protam. So this, like you're seated on sheets, and all that a sheet is threads that go this way and threads that go that way, and it makes cloth. So just as cloth is made of threads that go this way and that way, so also the whole cosmic manifestation and simply resting upon Balaram's energies. It's the expansion of his energy, going this way and going that way. You separate the threads and it's just thread. You put it together and it's a cosmic manifestation. It's Balaram's energies. So what's wonderful for Lord Balaram? He who is the rest and support of the entire cosmic manifestation. Then, lotus-eyed Lord Sri Krishna, whose glories are most pious to hear and chant, returned home to Braja with his elder brother Balaram. Along the way, the cowherd boys, his faithful followers, chanted his glories. After dining sumptuously on the delicious food given them by their mothers, and being pampered in various ways, the two brothers lay down upon their excellent beds and happily went to sleep in the village of Braja. A day in the life of Krishna and Balaram in the forest of Vrindavan. So according to Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Dainukaso represents gross materialistic intelligence or ignorance of spiritual knowledge. We were discussing that a little bit this morning. Vidura was lamenting or feeling great unhappiness due to those persons that have no attraction for these wonderful messages of Krishna Katha. And even when they have the opportunity, they'll reject the opportunity. Here's a verse from Bhagavad Gita where Krishna describes the same things. Those miscreants who are grossly foolish, who are lowest among mankind, whose knowledge is stolen by illusion, and who partake of the atheistic nature of demons, do not surrender unto me. Are you doing that on purpose? Oh no. The mayaya parityajana are those persons whose erudite knowledge has been nullified by the influence of illusory material energy. They are mostly very learned fellows, great philosophers, poets. This is Prabhupada's writing. So, although in this world there are scientists and great philosophers and learned persons, who make many speculative statements, the value of those speculative statements minus any connection with the personality of Godhead is exhibiting exactly what Krishna is describing in this mayaya prithagyana. Their knowledge is stolen by illusion, and this ignorance or ass-like tendency is what Dainukasura represents. The mudhas are those who are grossly foolish, like hard-working beasts of burden. They want to enjoy the fruits of their labor by themselves, and so do not want to part with them for the Supreme. The typical example of the beast of burden is the ass. This humble beast is made to work very hard by his master. The ass does not really know for whom he works so hard day and night. He remains satisfied by filling his stomach with a bundle of grass, sleeping for a while under fear of being beaten by his master, and satisfying his sex appetite at the risk of being repeatedly kicked by the opposite party. So, in Garga Samhita, there is a description of who Dainuka was in his previous life. He was the son of Bali, the son of Virochana, and his name was Sahashika. One time he was enjoying pastimes with 10,000 women in the Gandamanana mountain. That's Sahashika and the 10,000 women. Doesn't look like 10,000, but... And so as he was enjoying himself in this way, or attempting to enjoy himself in this way. Something very unfortunate happened. Durvas Muni was meditating nearby in a cave. Don't mess with Durvas Muni. Durvas Muni was meditating. See over here? There's Durvas Muni. And when he was meditating, he was disturbed by the sounds, by the all the music and merrymaking that Sahasrika was up to. So he cursed him. Fool, ass-like person, rise, become an ass, O demon, after 400,000 years in the transcendental circle of Mathura, in a sacred forest of Talavan, you will attain liberation by Lord Balaram's hand. Narada is narrating this. Because he had given Prahlad Maharaj the benediction, your descendants will not be killed by me. Krishna arranged that Dainukasura was killed by Lord Balaram's hand. Did you know that? Prahlad Maharaj had been given a benediction. The benediction was that none of your descendants will be killed by me. So Krishna didn't kill Dainukasura, Balaram did. The end. Oh, okay, we'll go back. So, when we're, the theme that Bhaktivinoda Thakur is presenting is there are some tendencies that we, in this material world, each of us have, and there's those tendencies is something that we need to personally address or make very specific effort to overcome. The tendency to remain situated in ignorance of our real identity and instead accepting another identity and laboring under that misconception, trying to find happiness through that mistaken conception of who we are. That can be lifted by mercy, but it also takes some effort. And the Balaram's fighting with Dainukasura indicates the necessity that we also have to undertake with Balaram's strength, with spiritual strength, to not succumb to the ignorance and foolishness of holding on to a material conception of life. There's a very nice story, not a Krishna story, but a traditional story, about why it's difficult to overcome the bodily conception of life. Would you like to hear that story? Once upon a time, there was a disciple who had a spiritual master. And his spiritual master lived outside of their little village. So every day he would go and hear the teachings of his spiritual master. And day by day, he was feeling great benefit was coming from hearing these teachings. And one day he got up enough courage to ask this burning question that he had been having for some time. He said, Guruji, can I ask you a question? Yes, you go ahead. Why is it so difficult to go further into spiritual life? Why is it so difficult? And his spiritual master said, that's a very important question. Let me ponder upon it very carefully. Come back tomorrow and I'll give you the answer. So the disciple was very enlivened. My spiritual master is going to answer this burning question. So he went back home. He could hardly sleep at night. He was so excited to go back in the morning and hear this teaching, this answer. So he was going through the forest along the path, and he heard off in the distance this sound. Help! 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 Sounds like Guruji's voice. He may be in difficulty. Maybe a tiger is chasing after him. He began running down the path, and as he got closer, the help, help, he could hear louder and louder. We got to the clearing in the middle of the forest where the cottage of his spiritual master was. He saw right in front of the cottage a very large tree, and his spiritual master with his arms and legs around the tree, and he, what happened, what happened? Started prying him, putting his foot against the tree and pulling his arm and pulling his waist and pulling his legs, and nothing worked. Then all of a sudden his spiritual master stood up and said, now do you understand? He said, it's so difficult to progress in spiritual life because we're holding on so tightly to our material conceptions of life. That's Dainukasura. Being absorbed in ignorance of our true identity, even when we have before us the proper understanding. We have abundant opportunity for proper spiritual understanding, and yet we tenaciously hold on to our material conceptions. So that's an effort that we have to personally make. We require mercy, we require Balaram's strength, but there's some commitment, some effort that we have to make on our side to let go rather than tenaciously hold on to our material conceptions. And Balaram will give us the strength and smash and defeat Dainukasura and all of his buddies, all of the accompanying features of material conceptions of life. So there is some thought for the evening on Lord Balaram. Hare Krishna. So any discussion from this topic?
I have a question.
You have a question? Okay.
Was Balaram Lakshman?
What was the question?
Was Balaram Lakshman?
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. His question was Balaram Lakshman? There's an interesting detail about that. When Lakshman appeared as the younger brother of Ram, because Ram was his elder brother, he simply served him as the younger brother. But so many difficulties they had to undergo because of the decisions that Ram made to go to the forest and so on. So Lakshman desired very much, next time we appear, I should be the older brother and he can be the younger brother. And same with Nityananda. He was the elder brother. And Lord Chaitanya was the younger brother. So yes, Lakshman and Balaram are the same. Anything else? Yes?
Hare Krishna Maharaj. Maharaj, I understand that Nityananda Prabhu is the spiritual master, the external manifestation of Nityananda Prabhu. So when we worship Nityananda Prabhu, my understanding was Nityananda Prabhu gives the love of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and Mahaprabhu gives the love of Radha Krishna. But sometimes it's hard. How do I reconcile the same with Lord Balaram? Because Balaram is in a different rasa. And what I was confused is, how does Lord Balaram give the Madhur rasa when he is in... I was confused with
the question itself is confusing. It has nothing to do with rasa. Okay. It has nothing to do with rasa. It's Nityananda in relation to Lord Chaitanya has nothing to do with rasa, as in Shanta, Dasya, Sakya, Vatsalya, Madhurya. It has to do with the mood of service permeates all of the rasas. The mood of service is the foundation of spiritual life. Balaram is the embodiment of that. As the embodiment of that, he imparts or illumines or awakens our tendency for service also through appropriate instructions. But those instructions are giving association to awaken our dormant desire to serve Krishna. And a particular rasa, which is the constitutional position of any jiva, will awaken as a result of that. In other words, supposing you have a whole variety of seeds, and you sprout those seeds, some moisture, some sunlight, and some earth. So one's going to be this kind of a flower, another's going to be that kind of a flower, but the process of germination is universal. So the function of Lord Balaram or Lord Nityananda, or for that matter their representative spiritual masters, is to awaken the dormant love of God and that mood of service that's within the heart of every living being, regardless of their rasa. Yeah? Okay. Yes.
Maharaj, the stories of Mahabharata, we see that Lord Balaram took many times a different opinion, different stance than Krishna. For example,
yes,
he wanted Subhadra to marry Duryodhan. How to understand that? Why did he do that? Is there any reason?
Yeah, it's variety. It's to give Krishna pleasure. Why does Satyabhama speak the way that she speaks to Krishna sometimes? Or Radharani, why does Radharani speak the way she speaks to Krishna sometimes? It gives Krishna pleasure. Krishna's will prevails, but in the course of Krishna's will prevailing, it looks like something else. It looks like another, you know, a contrary idea. But it's all part of some leela that they're performing together. Balaram's protest at how Krishna was treating Rukmi. It's his prerogative as the elder brother. But it's just leela. So his seemingly favoring Duryodhan, and when Krishna wouldn't take part in the battle, Balaram wouldn't take part in the battle. Yet he came, anyway, so many things, where it looks like it looks contradictory, or taking a contra position to Krishna's position. It's leela, to enhance Krishna's pleasure. Balaram has no interest other than that. Yes?
What was Ravan in his previous life?
What was Ravan in his previous life? You know the whole description of Jai and Vijay? So those three lifetimes as demons? Something else? Yes?
Thank you very much. The afternoon class, desire to serve is important, and again today the theme, like for making a commitment, I have a question is, one thing is like I have a feeling that I'm not sure if I want to make a commitment, it's coming out of sustained enthusiasm or enthusiasm that is like momentary. And the second part is I'm not sure like of the capacity and the capability to follow up and actually meet the commitment.
So what's the question? You're making a statement.
The question is, how do we know if it's coming out of sustained enthusiasm? Which
let some time pass and see. Let's say, just take, we've all had this example, or this experience. We take part in some festival, some something that's very inspiring. We go to a japa retreat and get really enthused to improve our chanting. Yeah, I really have to do this. And, or something like that. And what happens? So one of the common questions at the end of some very inspiring experience is, how do we sustain this? Because we all know the experience. It fades after some time. It doesn't go back to zero. It just isn't, you know, our level of enthusiasm doesn't sustain the same level. But at the same time, we're still making progress from some position to another position to another position, gradually making progress. So, when you are entertaining, your question, as far as I can understand, is when you're entertaining making some increase or some particular commitment in devotional service, knowing that there's a tendency to, you know, to aspire for something greater than we may be able to sustain, make some commitment that's less than, you know, what you think is ideal, what you'd really, really like, but something that over a period of time you can maintain and stay there. And, you know, make incremental increases, in other words, is the message that I'm responding. And be, on the one hand, always aspire or endeavor to increase. And on the other side, be cautious about making commitments that you don't sustain or maintain. So, while being cautious, don't be lethargic or complacent. And over a period of time, the answer to your question is we'll know whether it's realistic or not over a period of time. But if we're very... the topic of Balaram is very important here because in order to sustain some commitment, we need spiritual strength. And spiritual strength is not just our own spiritual strength that comes from mercy. We need that strength. So that comes from the spiritual master, the original spiritual master, Balaram. We need that strength. We can't just go it on our own. Otherwise, we wouldn't need a spiritual master. We wouldn't have that part in our process of devotional service. We do have that within our process of devotional service. So we need to have that relationship and that commitment to the personality of the spiritual master and he who he's representing, Balaram, strong. And then it's sustainable on that strength. The limitation primarily is our own attachment. Like that conventional example. It's so difficult because we're holding on so tightly to those things that we're in the material plane that we're attached to. And hold that is what it's not. We have a hold on it rather than it has a hold on us. We can't sustain spiritual commitments because of that attachment. Strong. So, little by little. One of the important things about commitment is when you make commitment, be cautious about making commitment, but when you make commitment, don't go back on it. Okay, you want to get the microphone or you can just tell me? He wants the microphone.
Is there night time in Goloka Vrindavan or not?
What?
Is there night time?
Night time in Goloka Vrindavan?
Yeah.
Why not? Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. You don't like that answer? Can I have the microphone?
Thank you.
There's what it says in Bhagavad Gita about nighttime is there's in the spiritual world, everything is self-luminous. And therefore, there's no need.
What does self-luminous mean?
I thought you would ask that question. That's why I said it so slowly and carefully. Everything is self-luminous. Luminous. It gives off its own light. Whereas in this world we need the sunlight, it says daytime, or at night moonlight, or electricity, which is just transformed sunlight. That's what electricity is. Yeah, like that. So in the spiritual world you don't need electricity. You don't need sunlight, you don't need moonlight, because everything is self-luminous. Now, your question, if everything is self-luminous, how do you have nighttime? That was your question, right? Is there nighttime? And there's nighttime. There's also a full moon night. And there's dark moon night. There's phases of the moon, even though there's no need of moonlight or sunlight. How's that? It's pastime. It's pastime, just like Balaram taking a different position than Krishna. He does so for Leela, for Krishna's pleasure. So there's a full moon night when rasa dance takes place because it enhances the rasa dance. So everything is arranged for Krishna's pleasure in the spiritual world. There's night and there's day. Although there's no need of sunlight or moonlight. There's neither day nor night in one sense. But there's the appearance by the internal potency for Krishna's pastimes. But so it's not the night like we know, but it's the real night and the real day. It's Krishna's pastimes. Okay? That was an interesting question. Got another one? Okay.
Thank you, Maharaj. Maharaj, what does Pralambasura represents?
We'll get there tomorrow.
Tomorrow?
Yeah. Maybe Monday. Monday evening. Pralambasura. Stay tuned.
I'll not be here Monday.
Yeah, Monday.
So Maharaj, so these two things, whatever Pralambasura represents and Dhenukasura represents. So when we, you said, these are the two things which we need to put efforts specifically.
Yeah.
And the other things can be removed by Krishna's mercy.
Yeah, it's not like, okay, Krishna's mercy, I'll just like lay back and wait for Krishna to take care of things. We're not, complacency is never appropriate in spiritual life. Just like, you know, putana represents false teachings or false teachers. So we have to be wary of false teachings and false teachers. But Krishna will defeat them. Provided we're wanting the genuine thing, Krishna will ensure and protect us and make sure we get the genuine thing. We don't become susceptible to false teachings and false teachers. I'm sure, reasonably certain, that we've all had the experience of encountering teachings and teachers that are presenting something that's not the truth. And we've set that aside. All of us. But where does that capacity come from? It's Krishna giving protection on the path of devotion to Him. And so on. Along the way to Krishna, Krishna's giving protection. So, it's not that, again, that we make no effort. Krishna just does everything. He is our servant and we're the enjoyer of His service. But especially these two, so they're very core to the position of a life in devotion. Holding on in ignorance to misconceptions. We've all had the experience, likewise, of trying to share Krishna consciousness with somebody that just doesn't get it. And one of the main reasons they don't get it is they don't want to get it. They're holding on very tightly to something else. They're determined to hold on to something else. So we should not be like that. Even, you know, we have to make a special effort to free ourselves, rid ourselves of misconceptions and holding on tightly to material conceptions of life and happiness and who we are and what the world is and what purpose our life has, holding on very tightly. We have to make an effort. Balaram will give us the strength, but we have to make that special effort. Speculative conclusions about things. Stay tuned for Pralambasura. Monday night. Yes?
When soul leaves one body, does it get another body immediately? Or
yes.
Is there some time lapse?
Well, you know, time is a very mysterious thing. Time is relative. So in one sense, we can say, yes, immediately. But in another sense, because time is relative, there's a whole experience between one life and the next life, and that transition, which in our time frame can be instantly, depends upon the destination of the soul. Supposing the soul has been very sinful, then they'll have to suffer in the hellish regions. But it's a subtle suffering, and it takes place on our plane very quickly. But in that plane, it's long duration. Right? You understand the relative time notion. There's a very nice verse in the Bhagavatam that specifically describes this, you know, simultaneous with giving up this body, the soul goes to another body. The example is given of an inchworm, that before the inchworm gives up the previous twig or branch upon which it's resting, it must contact another twig or branch. And then the hind legs come and join the front legs, and now it's on the next branch. It's in the same way, the soul cannot leave this body until the next destination is determined. And then when the next destination is determined, the transferal is immediate. Like the inchworm. Boop, boop.
My question was in relation to Jay and Vijay. They choose three births of being born as enemies. We see they're born as Hiranyakashipu and Hiranyaksha.
Yeah.
The next birth is Ravana and Kumbhakarna.
Yeah.
So there is a,
there's a time gap.
Time gap in between.
Yeah.
How do we understand that?
There's a very long purport in Chaitanya Charitamrita that addresses that specifically. When they were Hiranyakashipu and Hiranyaksha, when they were killed, this Chaitanya Charitamrita purport explains that they were not seeing the Lord as the Lord. They were seeing him as a mystic like me, because Hiranyakashipu and Hiranyaksha, they had mystic powers. But they were thinking, he's a mystic like me. So he's appeared in this feature, this Varaha and half man, half lion feature, as a mystic, but I'm powerful, I'll defeat him. So when they were killed, because they were killed by the hand of the Lord, or the nails of the Lord, they were relieved of all of their sinful reactions. But they weren't yet restored in their position of devotion. And so they weren't eligible to go back to their position of Jai and Vijay yet. So they attained... Now, this is the detail that time-wise it isn't explained, but they attained a state where they were in a neutral condition, like suspended animation, so to speak, or like, you know, Sayuja Mukti, liberated, but not yet in the position of service, having not taken shelter of that mood and position of service. And then when it was time for Ravana and Kumbhakarna, they took their birth. Again, killed by the Lord, but not thinking of the Lord as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, a similar position. Some, it doesn't give a location specific, but a neutral state until that time when they were to make their appearance. So that's the exception, because your question wasn't specific to Jai and Vijay or three births. Your question was, does the soul immediately attain? And the answer is immediately he attains.
So there are some exceptions in...
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. Now, I had this discussion with, you know, Sataputta? Richard Thompson, the author of many books on science and Krishna consciousness. Does that name ring a bell for you? Sataputta? Disciple of Srila Prabhupada who... was a genius, my personal estimation, brilliant. And so I had a discussion with him precisely on this topic, and I didn't get an answer that was very clear, but he was somehow very clear and just didn't communicate to me clearly. In Ian Stevenson's work, you know who he is?
I've heard the name.
Okay. His name is mentioned in Coming Back, and he's presently, now very old, but a professor at the University of Virginia, where he does studies on people that remember their previous lives. And his most recent book is Where Biology and Reincarnation Intersect. So I'll go off for a bit, but I'll come back to your question. In that book, he takes the whole pie of people that remember their previous lives and just takes a slice, and the slice is where those persons have remembrance of their previous lives, but there is a particular from-birth bodily identification that's connected with their previous life, like a missing limb. You know, somebody that is born with missing fingers on one hand, or somebody that has a half a leg. because the half a leg person was, they died being run over by a train, and their leg was severed when they died. So when they, in their next birth, half their leg, they were born with half a leg. And then that person identified who they were in their previous life, so he went first back to the birth records, showing, yes, this person was born with half a leg. It didn't happen later on. And then went back to, you know, who that person was in the previous life and all the things that they remembered about their previous life and verified those things. So that, you know, where the biology and reincarnation intersect. And sometimes there's this time gap. This is your question. So I asked Sariputta, how's that? You know, there's, if there's all this scientifically verifiable stuff that says, you know, person X in their previous life was person ABC, whoever that, you know, whatever that connection is, and there's this time, it's not like when they were born and then a 9-month gestation period and then they were in the next life. So where's this time thing? Because we say, scripture says specifically, it's immediate. And he gave an answer that I didn't exactly understand, but it went something like this. There's relative time. So when we say immediate, it means literally immediate, but it's also, there's different things that happen with time. Because during that period that I asked him that question, he was writing a book on time, which I've not read yet, and I'm sure it's like, whew, you know, way up there. He made a presentation at the Festival of Inspiration on that book on time. So time is something that Krishna can move. It's his energy, Kala Shakti. Time I am. So he can, his answer was like that. Krishna can expand and contract time. And there's time is relative according to the position of the person. Or, you know, according to relative time. So in general, we can say it's immediate. And then the particulars may look a little different than immediate. But the destination of the soul is determined. Prabhupada's explanation is a coma is a situation where the body is yet to be determined. And so the body is clinically unfit for habitation, but the soul is still there. And there are cases where persons come out of a coma, and there are cases when persons leave the coma and they leave their body. So that coma space it's yet to be determined. Anyway, it gets a little fuzzy. Not so precise. For people that have scientific brains, they like things very precise. But, you know, Sariputta is a scientist, so I asked him that question. And time is collapsible, expandable and collapsible, according to Krishna's will and in the circumstance that is required.
You said sometimes soul, when somebody is very sinful, it suffers on a hellish planet.
Yes.
In a subtle form also without
yes.
getting a body.
That's right. That means it's something like when you're asleep and you're having a dream, a whole lot of time can be passing. But it's just, you know, a flash of time in this realm. Because the mind, it can do a lot. It can go very quickly. And so many things are happening. Flashing images of events, passing and passing and passing, and it's just moments here. So like that, the subtle body is taken from the gross body. And the subtle body, just like the Yamadutas are subtle beings. And those subtle beings take the subtle body to that subtle place called Yamaloka. And Yamaraj makes a determination. And based upon that determination, there's some suffering. Because one doesn't go before Yamaraj if one is freed from their impure activities. For a devotee, just by engaging in devotional service, we're freed from that having to meet the Yamadutas. But those that do meet the Yamadutas, it means some hellish suffering is coming. So the decision of where and for how long is made by Yamaraj, and the Yamadutas make that arrangement, and the living entity suffers. They suffer so badly, it's described this way, that they're pleading, screaming, please give me any form of life to just get me out of here. So they take that form of life, a worm or an insect or a whatever, to get relief from that hellish experience, which is a subtle, it's real in one sense because the soul is there experiencing it, but it's happening on a subtle plane primarily. And on this plane, it's a flash. It's similarly, Prabhupada described like this, that when we become Krishna conscious, it is like, but a moment has passed from falling from our position of being in our relationship with Krishna and leaving that. It's subtle. It's the covering of Maya. And when the covering of Maya is finally removed, it's like a flash of time has passed. Time is relative. And Krishna can, this is Sariputta's point, Krishna can manipulate time to suit different purposes. That was his answer to this question from Ian Stevenson's work. I wish he was still around to ask many such questions of. He was a brilliant personality. No longer with us. Any other? Yes?
Maharaj, I had a question. In this human body, the heart is the seat of the soul, correct?
Yes.
Now, when people have a heart transplant,
yeah.
Now their heart is out and somebody else's heart is in.
Yeah.
Now, what's happening there?
It's in the vicinity of the soul, but it's not like you're in an automobile and, you know, if the automobile gets lifted and moved over to there, you're moved along with the automobile. It's in that vicinity, but not limited by the muscle or the organ of the heart. It's within the heart, animating. But if the muscle is removed or that organ is removed, that the heart, the soul doesn't get changed to another soul, comes in the body. It's the same soul in that vicinity. Unless the operation is a failure. And then the soul leaves. Prabhupada was asked that question specifically, and that was how he responded.
Maharaj, I'm sorry, but I must be thick-headed. I didn't understand your response. I heard you, but
I'll say it again a little differently. Presently, the soul is within the heart, or within the region of the heart, but it's not like we're contained by the heart, and so if you remove the heart, you remove the soul because we're contained within the heart. Rather, we're in the vicinity of the heart, transcendentally, and if the heart is removed, another heart is placed, we're still in the vicinity of the heart. It's a function of giving life to the body and spreading consciousness through the body, through the medium of the heart and the blood that's pumped by the heart. Consciousness is distributed. Prabhupada gave the example of a tourniquet. You make take a cloth or string or something and tie it and make it very tight, and you'll lose sensation in part of your body because the blood isn't going there. So consciousness in part is being spread through the body through the circulatory system. But it doesn't mean circulatory system creates consciousness. It's the soul that extends consciousness through that mechanism, through the body. So when we're not contained and limited by the heart or the body, rather, it's through that medium, through that vehicle, that consciousness is spread through the body. But the soul isn't dependent upon this particular heart or that particular heart. It's a function that if the time of death is determined, the soul will leave. But if you remove this heart and replace with that heart, we're not taken out of the body by a heart transplant. Because we're not contained within, like, you know, a nut within the shell of the nut. And you move the shell over here, you're also removing the nut. But we're transcendentally situated, not physically limited. Anything else? Yes?
We say that Lord Balaram is Krishna, the spiritual master. What do we mean?
Here's the microphone. When we say Balaram is the original spiritual master, what do we mean? I thought I expressed that, but I'll say it again. Balaram exposes, here is Krishna, just like Krishna was doing with Balaram. See, the trees and the birds and the peacocks, and they're all just offering their praises, the bumblebees, and they're chanting your glories. These are great sages. They're not just like great sages. They're great sages. And so on. So that's what Balaram does. He reveals Krishna. And that's what the spiritual master is to do. In following Balaram is to reveal Krishna, to disclose Krishna, to deliver Krishna's message, the message of Krishna. And it's the same function. And to do that function one requires the spiritual empowerment of Balaram to do so. Otherwise one cannot. So he's the original spiritual master. Okay, thank you very much. Shrila Prabhupada Ki Jai.
Yeah.